Welcome to the Random Article Podcast with your horoscope for December 2018. If you feel overwhelmed and confused by the vicissitudes of the swirling cosmic swamp fart of life, this podcast probably won't help, but at least you can carry on with the illusion of thinking you know what's coming. And so we begin our predictions of your future with Aries. Aries, consider the life cycle of the grape. It begins, of course, with a humble raisin, a shriveled brown nugget of nutrients planted deep into rich, loamy soil. The raisin is watered by the rain, fed photosynthetically by the sunshine to its bristling little green leaves emerging into the sunshine above, and slowly the raisin grows and emerges and forms into a beautiful green egg the size of a softball nestled on the brown earth. And after the incubation period, the egg hatches into a litter of several dozen identical little grapelings, the females of which fight to the death to establish the grape queen, the sole surviving female grapeling, which is served by the male grapelings, establishing a great colony of grapes, which sends its grapelings across the area to search for nutrients, avoiding predation by blueberries, and continually swelling their numbers through a process of grape mitosis to add new ranks of grapes to the colony, warring against rival grape colonies and eventually developing enough biomass to have a distributed consciousness network, and to finally, in the final life stage, merge all of the grapes in the district into a giant meta grape the size of a greyhound bus that swells and grows, glistening in the sun, into a giant green wise mass which hits a critical mass and vaporizes the entire body of grape, rising as invisible vapor into the clouds. Gone. Until weeks later. Raisins. They rain down from the clouds. Thousands of tiny brown raisins scattered across the landscape, pattering off the trees, rolling down into riverbeds, forming little mounds and lakes of raisins to descend back into the soil from where they came, to seed the earth for a thousand more grapes to grow and prosper and continue the cycle of the grape. Aries, in December, you should eat fruit. Taurus, you are the product of billions of years of evolution. From the first moment that a molecule learned spontaneously to self-reproduce, from the moment these tiny primordial life forms began to split and grow and compete and evolve, from the moment the first eyes were opened upon a young sun, from the moment the first thought was raised, the first spark between infant neurons. All these millions of generations of organisms strive to grow, to survive, to reproduce. Fish things, plant things crawling onto land, muscles and tendons forged over millennia. They crawled out of the salt seas. They stood blinking on the brown earth. And our hominid ancestors, our grandparents and our grandparents' parents, evolutionarily speaking, strived over millennia to think and to create and to survive, make gods and culture and society. And they fought, Taurus, above all, to stand. Each vertebrae like a link in a chain, forged by the fire of their suffering. Your ancestors died for your right to stand, Taurus. Your ancestors fought to rise from all fours. Your ancestors sacrificed everything so that you could stand on 2 feet and look to the horizon with your back straight and your head high. So Taurus, for the sake of your ancestors, fix your fucking posture. Get one of those like orthopedic shoes if you have to, ergonomic computer chair, like fuck, Taurus, stand up straight. Stand. Gemini, there's a misconception that space, the vacuum of space, the empty black void that stretches on beyond human imagination, in scale, in coldness, in distance, in complexity. There's a misconception that the vacuum of space is empty, that there's nothing there in vacuum. But the truth is that as scientists study nothingness, they find more and more. It turns out that the universe despises an empty space and contrives to fill it with particles, with energy, with movement, with valencies, with orbiting particles, with elementary movements, with forces, with electromagnetism, with nuclear forces strong and weak. The universe is bristling with energy and particles, especially in those spaces that seem empty. Gemini, vacuum is not empty. Nothingness is powerful. To witness it, try sucking all the air out of a plastic bottle. You'll get your tongue stuck in the bottle. It's very painful. I don't recommend it. But it demonstrates the power of vacuum. Vacuum pulls the universe into itself in its hunger to make nothing into something. So Gemini, include some nothing in your December and see what it generates. Have empty space in your day, in your brain, on a page, and discover what it is filled with. From nothing, what will come? Cancer, did you ever see that Indiana Jones movie where Mr. Jones jumps into a refrigerator in order to survive a nuclear explosion? Cancer, I can't vouch for the scientific accuracy of that scene, but I can assure you, astrologically speaking, that a refrigerator could solve most of your problems in December. Think of what a refrigerator represents. It's a place of preservation, where life and nutrients and the stuff of the body stays preserved and healthy and fresh and strong and colored. It prevents the wilting. It prevents the erosion of our souls and indeed our leftover chicken parmigiana. The refrigerator is a sanctum for things that are and will be. A time capsule that keeps the organic organic. And how does it work? What is this temple of continuity constructed of? What eldritch fluids and gases run through its unseen pipes? What does its language of incomprehensible hums and clicks mean? If you stand and listen, if you put your hand to the refrigerator and you really listen, you will hear the voice of the gods speaking to you. Why do you think at every house party, everyone congregates around the refrigerator, in the kitchen? It's because in a disinhibited state of mind, people are naturally drawn to the true locus of cosmic power in any household. And Cancer, that's the fridge. If a refrigerator appeared in prehistoric Earth, like in 2001, you know the black monolith that inspires insight amongst the pre-Homo sapien monkey folk. The fridge is that monolith in our 21st century. The refrigerator is the monolith that will spark your insight and your evolution this December. Cancer. Leo. Leo. They say no man is an island. Because, in truth, some people are more like atolls. You know, like coral reefs, promontories. Some people are promontories, like they're still connected to the main landmass, you know? However independent they might think they are, striving off into the ocean, they're still inextricably a part of where they came from. Some people are supercontinents, great masses that dominate and define the surrounding lands. Some people are tidal islands who sometimes emerge from the ocean, then are submerged again in a seasonal cycle. Manic depressives rising and falling in energy. Leo, you're like a caldera. Don't take this the wrong way, but you know what, a caldera as an island, it's like a ring-shaped, crescent-shaped island, and it's the result of a catastrophic explosion, a volcanic eruption. Leah, don't you sometimes think that a catastrophic, traumatic explosion is part of what shaped you? You don't need to worry about it, really, though. I don't mean to. You can be reassured, because if you ever visit a caldera, they can be very peaceful, very green. Great cocktails you can get on some calderas. So Leo, no man is an island. You may be a caldera. Fucking own it, you know? You'll be right. Virgo. Virgo. You know what dust is? You know that grey matter? I don't mean brain matter. Let's do that one. Too loud. Virgo. You know what dust is, right? Those mounds of grey material that accumulates in the corners of your life, of your mind, of the months, of the decades. It rises, it increases, it grows. However much you clean, it lurks in the corners, all the places you can't reach with your vacuum cleaner or your thoughts. Under your fridge, behind all the cupboards, between the cracks in the floorboards. Dust is all around you, Virgo, all the time. It's part of the environment, and it's part of you. Because you know what dust is made of, right, Virgo? Dust is mostly human cells. Dust is human skin, as the outer layers of skin drop off to be replaced by new cells rising from below. We are constantly shedding our skins like snakes, continuously leaving grey particulate matter in our wake wherever we walk. You're surrounded by your flesh, Virgo. In a way, all those little dust bunnies are your children. They're of your body, and they're all around you. Virgo, they're hungry. Virgo, they want to return. The dust is creeping back towards you whenever you're not looking, creeping closer like a grey shadow reaching to embrace. What if you wake up one morning in December, Virgo, coated with your dust, returned from whence it came? What if you're entombed, Virgo? What if you wake with the grey closed over your nostrils, closed over your eyes? What if you are cloaked in what once came from you? What if the dust covers you, Virgo? What if you cannot scream because the dust is within you, Virgo? Virgo, they're coming, Virgo. Libra, in December, you're going to wake up somewhere unfamiliar. You'll open your eyes, you're lying on your back. It's cold here. You can see the stars above, stars that you don't recognize. Stars lit by some swirling green aurora. Too bright, too close to be earthly. There's a ring in the air, like a glass that's just been tapped with a teaspoon, ringing almost imperceptibly, continuously, just a hum, just an energy in the air. And you stand and you look around and you're standing on what looks like a staircase that extends in every direction around you, a great curved staircase. Or a pyramid? You can't see the bottom or the top. All you can see are these great steps rising up before you and descending down behind you, and either side curving off into the distance. It's dark here, Libra. Where are you, Libra? You stand and you've got to choose a direction. You've got to go somewhere. You can't stay in this strange dimension forever. Should you descend or ascend? It looks dark down there. You don't want to go down into the inky blackness, so you climb. Each step is maybe up to your waist, so it's work. It's really doing something for your calves, I tell you. The glutes. Oof. The glutes. But you keep climbing the steps. And as you climb the steps, the curve of the staircase gets tighter, and you realize you are descending towards a narrower peak. It's like a conical mountain, a conical stepped mountain, or like a pyramid that's curved rather than triangular. And as you climb, you start to see a figure. To your side, to your right, you see a shadow doing what you're doing, climbing up at exactly the same rate that you are. And you shout out, and they move, and you wave your hand, and you think they wave back, but when you walk towards them, they seem to walk away. Whatever you do, you can't seem to reach this shadow out in the dark, so you keep climbing. And as you climb, your fellow climber grows nearer, and you look to your left, and you've got another fellow on the other side. You're flanked by shadows climbing alongside you, friends or enemies, you can't tell. But eventually, you get closer and closer to the peak. and your fellows are closer now. Now that the staircase is so small, it's like a series of platforms above you. You're almost at the top now, and the features of your compatriots draw closer, and you recognize them as your own. These people look the same as you, Libra, but they're moving exactly as you move. When you run towards them, they run in the opposite direction, around the curved surface of the pyramid. They're reflections of you, Libra. Whatever you do, however you move, they copy that motion, around and around the pyramid. But as you rise, they grow closer. So you climb and you climb until there's just one step left. You're so close now that you can reach out and touch both of your fellows. And you realize now that there's four of you. There's four reflections, each touching hands, each moving identically from the last. And then you climb to the final step, to the top of the pyramid, and it's four of you facing each other. And you know that if you take one step further, you will step all into each other, four at once, and then the four quarters will be whole, and none of you will exist individually. What will you do, Libra? What will you do? Scorpio, you're familiar with the concept of original sin, right? Original sin was when some serpent, some kind of reptile at any rate, convinced early humans to learn terrible knowledge and to break the rules of their father slash son slash ghost. It's complicated. God. They learned sin, they saw their nakedness, and they were ashamed, and forever after, mankind was stained. We had passed through a veil, taken a step we can never take back, entered a darker world than the one we were born in, never to return. But here's the crazy bit, Scorpio. Original sin might have been the first sin, but it wasn't the only sin. Scorpio, there's a second sin. And this December, you're going to have the opportunity to take this step for humanity. From original sin to second sin. I tell you, it's a riot, this second one. If you thought learning about nakedness and stuff was wild, man, there's whole new sins waiting just around the corner. People are going to get real excited about this. And once you've done second sin, why not take the next step? Why not head to tertiary sin, the third in the series? Make it a trilogy. Fuck it. Go for fourth and fifth. Make a sixth sin franchise. Make a sin cinematic universe. Keep upping your state of depravity and godlessness to higher steps. Imagine what would be possible. It might sound bad, it might sound horrifying to enter greater heights of sin, but you know, like, Adam and Eve, they were ignorant, right? And sexless. They didn't know that they were naked, they were just walking around the garden eating fruit off the backs of tigers or something. I mean, if we could go back to before original sin, would we? Innocence sounds nice, but isn't it naivety? Do we want to give up our gift of knowledge? And therefore, would we not want to take additional knowledge, additional sin, by further steps into the depths? It's like a staircase. We've taken one step. Why not take another? Why not take the steps 3, 5, 6 at a time? Scorpio, why not leap? It's up to you. Sagittarius. This December, you're going to take a trek into a jungle. A place where the maps just have weird scrawls and pictures of skulls and islands shaped like skulls and skulls shaped like islands and all sorts of mysterious things going on. And you journey and you take your machete and you slash through the vines and you have exciting adventures escaping from local creatures, and you have all manner of hijinks until you finally reach your destination. The temple. The old, overgrown stone temple. And as you step up, the fires all light to illuminate, like must be some kind of ancient magic going on here, Sagittarius. This temple, what kind of treasures are you going to be able to loot inside this temple? What are you going to find? What dangers? What traps? Are you going to find sarcophagi with the deceased inside? Are you going to find monsters with too many eyes? What are you going to find, Sagittarius? You step into the temple, you creep into the dark, and you hear sounds. What are they? Some ancient demons, dead gods, strange beasts? What are these noises? You hear lights, you creep deeper into the temple with your hand on your revolver. Can the undead be killed by mortal weapons? And you creep down, and you creep down, and you step through a portal into, like a doorway, into a lit room, and inside you find it's a bunch of just sort of well-dressed young people, like, sitting around talking over a book. Someone's wearing a funny hat, and they say, what do you want? And you say, are you guys investigating this ancient broken temple? And they're like, no, this is our temple. We're praying, like, we're holding a service. Like you can join in if you're into our flavor, but otherwise, like, you can, like, fuck off, to not put too fine a point on it. And you say, I thought this was, like, abandoned. And they say, like, no, like jungle people pray too. Like, just because we're in the jungle, it doesn't mean, like, we're just having a, can you get out? And you say, oh, sorry. So you leave the temple. Sagittarius. I mean, Capricorn. Capricorn, your lover, the one to whom you are devoted, demands something. Your lover wants something of you to prove your devotion. It's an ancient story. You know how this goes. You need to bring some symbol to the one you care for to demonstrate your dedication, to woo her, to win her over, to bind one another together, to show true love, as opposed to fallacious love, various calumnies masquerading as love, semi-affection, half crushes, demi love. It's the real deal you're going for, Capricorn. And your lover demands tribute. So you search. You search for all manner of gifts. Material things are the obvious one. Jewelry, handmade things, little paintings and poems. You use words. You use rhetoric. You use your silver tongue in more ways than one. You find all the different representations of your affection to bring to your lover. Use physical acts, feats of endurance and strength, both body and of mind and of heart. You give gifts to your lover's life. You assist and improve and offer all kind of support and hugs and tears and ears. And you offer whatever you can think of, but your lover is still not quite satisfied. Your lover is not quite convinced of your devotion. Your lover says they want the most valuable thing that you have. And so you keep struggling, you keep trying for decades, and decades trying to prove to your lover that you'll give them everything. And this lasts for so long. This lasts until you're an old person, until your body's creaking beneath you and your silver tongue is lagging behind chipped yellow teeth. And you realize that this is your last day. And you say to your lover, I tried to give you everything. I tried to find what you required. I tried to demonstrate my devotion, to win you, to love you as best I could. Was this not enough? And then your lover says, I wanted you to give me everything. I wanted you to give me the most valuable thing you had. The gift I wanted, for everything I sought, was your time, your days, your life, your dedication, through your search, through your continuous determination, you demonstrated such. Love's not a thing that you give. It's a thing that you do over decades. And Capricorn, you did it. All I asked for was everything, and you gave it. Aquarius. We all tell ourselves lies. It's a well-known fact that we mislead ourselves with non-facts. We tell ourselves lies like I'm in control of my life. And lies like, I'll floss tomorrow. And lies like, eating pizza for 3 meals in a row is appropriate nutrition. You tell yourself all sorts of lies, Aquarius, and that's okay. In fact, Aquarius, you should take this further. You should try to see just how outrageous a lie you can believe. Like, really push it, Aquarius. See how far you can take it. Believe lies that you've never imagined before. Believe lies that contradict each other. Believe lies that contradict themselves. Believe lies that you don't even understand. Believe lies in languages that you don't speak. Believe lies that are abstract, a sculptural piece. Really stretch your belief muscles. Feel the burn in your brain and your belief node. Really get those neurons twanging like the strings on a violin. Play your brain like an instrument in your effort to believe falsities. What's the Alice in, believe 10 impossible things before breakfast. Aquarius, I want you to believe a dozen by lunchtime and 100 lies by dinner. You must study lies, dissect lies, revel in the lies, bathe in lies, install a new faucet in your bath to fill your tub with falsity, with calumnies, with unbelievable things. Pick them apart, dissect them like a frog on a high school biology table. See what makes lies tick. Take them apart like clockwork. Examine all the tiny little cogs and learn to manufacture them yourselves. Become an artisan of the lie. File them, carve them, grow them. Become an artist of the lie. And you could use this for ill. You could mislead with lies, that's the traditional use. Or maybe you could use lies to reverse engineer the truth. The better you can identify a lie, the better you can identify the truth. If only by a process of elimination. The more lies you see, like Minesweeper, the more you narrow in on the truth. And if you identify that Minesweeper-y truth, you'll be rewarded with the greatest reward. The little yellow smiley face with the glasses on it. Because that's what you get if you win the Minesweeper. Pisces. Pisces. Did you ever hear the tale of the two horses who fell in love? One of them was called Phaetra, and one of them was called Phaidon. Phaetra and Phaidon were enthusiastic lovers, just skipping through the meadows, eating hay bales on sticks, walking through the, like, they were holding hands all the time, which is really hard when you're a horse holding hooves. Try walking on all fours with two hooves holding. It's not easy. So Phaetrus and Phaida, their love was beautiful. You'd be an idiot not to see that, but not everyone wanted to see that all the time. Love can be annoying when it's someone else's, and these horses were just going for it, like PDAs in front of everyone all the time, and everyone just found it annoying. So the gods intervened, as they do in such situations, and the gods cursed the horses. The cruelest curse they could think of. The horses wanted to be together so much, Phaetra and Friday, and so the gods afflicted them by merging them. The two horses were placed together into one body, with one head on each end, with sort of double-ended hooves. No butt, just head on each end. And the real cruelty of this punishment was that only one head, either Phaetrus or Phaidon, was awake at any one time. Because Phaetrus was awake in the day, whereas Freytag was awake in the night. So they could never speak to another, never interact with one another. They existed in... it would as well be alternate dimensions, alternate timelines, opposite sides of the Earth. Metaphysically, they were on opposite sides of the Earth. One in the day side and one in the night side. Copernicanly speaking. The point is that these horses suffered being separate from one another. All they wanted was one another. But by being on opposite sides of their body, opposite sides of the night, they hardly thought they could survive. So the horses, they learned to write, which is, again, difficult with hooves. And they send each other messages and they conspire to develop a plan to circumvent the gods' punishment. To find a way to exist in both light and dark, night and day. So they tried doing things like getting right on the edge of day and night at the same time, trying to find those moments in the twilight when maybe they could both stay awake, consuming huge amounts of coffee to try and stay awake into the other horse's period, all sorts of things like that, but it seemed impossible. In order to escape the punishment, the horses needed to escape day and night entirely. So the horses tried tunneling into the earth, underground, where there is neither day nor night, or flying into space, where the movements of the sun and the earth seem irrelevant, but the gods were sticklers, and the day-night cycle just arbitrarily corresponded to whichever face of the earth they were closest to. It was all a bit arbitrary and bureaucratic, but that's gods for you. Nothing if not arbitrary and bureaucratic. But the point is that the horses eventually found that the only escape from their punishment was to enter the center of the earth. Because only in the center of the earth is there complete ambiguity as to whether it's day or night. So they were compressed. They were crushed by the pressure of the whole world upon them as they tried to force their bodies back into a singular central point to try to realize their love again. And it didn't really work. Like, they broke the curse, but they were just like a horsey mass at the center. It was pretty gross. Pretty wooden. Ophiuchus. Ophiuchus. You heard of the phrase storm in a teacup? Storm in a teacup's an interesting phrase. But it doesn't quite describe what your December will be like. Certainly it's going to be like a beverage climatological sort of a day. Like the climate of your cups will be important. Bring a cocktail umbrella in case of some kind of rainfall. Be wary of the possibility of Mountain Dew precipitation. G&T humidity. Look to your weather person. They'll advise you of a hot chocolate convection current incoming. That there could be diet Dr. Pepper drought. A high pressure apple juice cyclonic vector zone heading inbound. Weather's unpredictable. I'm an astrologer, not a climatologist, but I tell you, some kind of beverage receptacle extreme weather event, it's coming. So batten the hatches, Ophiuchus. Hunker down. And stay on the Weather Channel, because shit's about to get windy and damp, but in like a beverage. So thanks for watching and or listening to the Random Article Podcast Horoscope for December 2018. This is now a podcast, so make sure to subscribe to the podcast and share it to anyone else who needs astrological wisdom in their life. And tune in for the next podcast, which might be monthly now. Dunno. Cheers.